Criminal Pursuits, A Good Omens multi-voice podfic, written by Feral Tuxedo and voiced by
Sky Asimaru
and Chop. Summary: 1931, when professional scoundrel Crowley is tasked with the kidnapping of author and rich kid Aziraphale Fell, it appears to be a job like any other. His victim's enthusiasm to be kidnapped comes as a bit of a surprise. Chapter 1: The Abduction of Aziraphale Fell.
So, how did you get into a life of crime?
Aziraphale Fell asked, rather conversationally, considering he sat on the passenger side of Crowley's motor car with his wrists bound and a paper bag over his head.
Was it a lifelong ambition? A childhood dream? Or more of an accident, much like my own career?
Crowley said nothing and kept his eyes on the road, on the lookout for potential pursuers. They were speeding away from Tedfield as fast as the engine allowed, racing past street lamps and terraced houses through a blissfully deserted suburb.
I'm a writer, you see. Never intended to become one, but you know how these things go. I was bored after graduation, then the novel became a success, and now here I am with a contract and a publisher eagerly awaiting the next one.
He let out a dramatic sigh, which was somewhat muffled by the paper bag.
Murder in Eden. Have you read it?
No.
Oh.
Feld's disappointment was audible.
A bit of a busman's holiday for you, I suppose.
I'm not a murderer.
Crowley said through gritted teeth.
Might become one, though, if you don't shut up.
Aziraphale Fell did shut up, but with a smug huff that told Crowley he was not at all intimidated by the threat. He sat back into the gleaming black leather of the passenger seat, raising his bound wrists to adjust the hem of his black waistcoat. He began humming a nondescript tune, which was a great deal more irritating than talking. But this was clearly not the sort of man who could remain silent for long. Before they'd even made it outside Tedfield, Fell laced his fingers together. The paperback rustled as he let out another sigh.
Oh, these automobiles are awfully loud, aren't they? I suppose that's the price one pays for speed and convenience these days. Is it yours?
Huh?
The car. You see, my brother has been talking about buying one for the family. I don't personally see the appeal, but he's always got places to be, people to see, and he doesn't enjoy train journeys like I do. But then Gabriel has always...
It's not my car.
Then, after thinking about it for a moment, Crowley added...
Well, I suppose she's mine now.
Fell gasped, managing to sound both scandalized and delighted.
You stole it? Goodness, you really are a criminal.
Yeah, I thought the fact you're being kidnapped would have clued you into that.
Crowley muttered, but he wasn't sure Fell was even listening.
How exciting! I've always wanted to talk to a thief. Was it difficult breaking into this? And, for that matter, do all motor cars drive the same? I've never bothered to learn myself, though I have often wondered if one car were to chase another. Oh, I do wish I'd thought to bring my notebook with me. One always has the best ideas when it's most inconvenient.
Crowley bit down on a laugh. Being blindfolded and tied up in a motor car was most inconvenient indeed.
To the theatre? You wish you'd brought your notebook to the theatre?
As I said, ideas come at the most unexpected times, and the play really was dreadful. I'm in half a mind to thank you for tearing me away from it when you did. Though I wish you'd given me enough time to rinse off my shirt. The stain will never come out now.
The stain had been caused by a well-timed glass of red wine, expertly spilled over the man's pristine shirt and waistcoat by the concessions boy, who'd rightfully thought it an excellent way to earn a shilling. That lad would make a successful criminal one day. He'd broken down in nearly convincing tears as he stammered his apologies, shepherding Fell to the deserted staff bathroom. There, of course, Crowley had been lurking behind the door, fishing rope at the ready. Crowley glanced down at Fell's hands. The rope was wound tightly around both wrists, skin pink and chafing already. Poor bastard. And yet, he sat there quite happily, upright on the leather seat with his hands in his lap. Not that he had a choice in the matter.
Just out of interest, where are you taking me?
This time, Crowley couldn't hold back a laugh.
Nice try, mate. Not telling you.
Partly because Crowley wasn't entirely sure himself. There had been directions in the anonymous letter he'd received, along with a tightly folded wad of cash, and the promise of more in the form of ransom. If those directions were correct, they would still be on the road for a few more hours, due to arrive at their destination sometime after midnight. They had already left the outskirts of Tedfear behind, and were now rolling along a deserted country road. Which was good. The fewer people saw a gleaming black Bentley at this unusual hour of night, the better. Not to mention the fact that one of the inmates of said motor car was wrapped up like a beef joint fresh from the butcher's. For a while, they drove along in silence. Well, as much silence as the rather noisy engine and the screeching of tires on rough gravel afforded. Perhaps Fell had fallen asleep. Crowley found himself, absurdly, wishing for his prattling bag. He was beginning to get rather sleepy. Should have packed a flask of coffee. Bloody hell, had he gotten himself into this situation? He'd sworn never to do kidnappings. Too much trouble, too much stress. It always preferred to work in solitude, and by its very nature, the crime of kidnapping necessitated company. Usually anxious and often terrified company. And yet, the money had been too good to refuse, and it had seemed a simple job. The boy is spineless, the mysterious letter writer had assured him. And his family's wealth is immense. The plan was really very easy. Take the young Mr. Fell to the agreed-upon secure location, squeeze as much ransom out of the Potter families as possible, return the lad without a scratch, and make off for a nice life on the continent. Crowley had always fancied the Pyrenees. Good food, good wine, plenty of sunlight, and people minded their own business. Or, so he'd heard, he'd never been further south than Bournemouth. He drove along the darkness at a faster pace than was strictly necessary, now they were well out of Oxfordshire. But the road was deserted, and without Fell to converse with, it was a dreadfully dull drive. Suddenly, a light flashed up ahead on the left side of the road. Someone was there. A hitchhiker, or a bicyclist, or a lone wanderer who had gotten lost on a nighttime walk. Crowley hit the brakes and slowed to a halt, but there was nowhere else to go, just a narrow road following the gentle curve of the hillside. Next to him, Fell jolted awake with a sharp intake of breath.
Whatever's happening?
Nothing.
Crowley snapped, drowning in the panic and confusion that rose within him. He ripped the paperback off Felt's head, revealing a set of panicked eyes and a head of white blonde curls that had been neatly combed and pomaded when he'd last seen them a few hours ago, but were now sticking up in all directions.
"One word and you're dead,"
Crowley growled, before smashing the paperback down onto Felt's bound hands, covering them. He'd only have to shake his wrists for the bag to fall off and reveal everything. The light by the side of the road approached, with a back and forth motion that suggested a person holding an electric torch. When the man had gotten close enough to be caught in the double cones of the Bentley's headlights, Crowley saw with the ice-cold horror of recognition that it was a police officer.
Fuck!
He turned to Fel and found him, inexplicably, looking back at him rather than at the approaching Bobby. His guaranteed rescue. Fel's eyes were large and round, stormy grey in the darkness, and they were staring straight at him with a determined sort of look that made no sense whatsoever.
"You should probably open that window."
Crowley obeyed, winding down the window just as the police officer reached the car.
"You're all right in there, sir?"
The man spoke in the booming tone of voice that was so common among his profession.
Sirs?
He added, when he'd bent down enough to spot the young fell on the other side of the seat.
"Quite all right, Constable,"
Fell said, smiling, as if that was true.
"Just stopped for a moment. If you must know, I get terribly nauseous in these awful machines, and I'm afraid I had a rather large dinner today."
The policeman looked back and forth between them, taking in Fell, wearing his wine-stained but undoubtedly expensive dinner suit, and Crowley in his worn grey shirt and no tie. He spoke directly to Fell. Probably thought Crowley was his chauffeur.
"Right, well, you shouldn't stop in the middle of the road like this, especially in the dark. Wouldn't want anyone bumping into the back of you."
"Of course, I'm awfully sorry. It's all my fault. I shouldn't have had the pudding, but I've always been weak for an eat-on miss. It was absolutely to die for. I could have easily devoured another two, or..."
"Don't you worry about it now. Just get yourselves moving again."
"We most certainly shall. Thank you ever so much for your understanding and your sound advice. Good night, Constable."
Fell shuffled about in his seat, nudging Crowley's leg with his own.
"Whenever you're ready, James."
Crowley put the car into gear and drove off with a mumbled,
"Good night, sir,"
that was drowned out by the renewed roaring of the engine. The police officer tipped his hat and watched them drive away until he was a little more than a black dot in the thick darkness of the countryside in Crowley's swing mirror. Then his gaze drifted back to Fell, who still sat up straight, still with a placid smile on his face. Flyaway hairs, the only giveaway that this was not occasional evening drive for him. All in all, he looked rather relaxed.
"Why'd you call me James?"
Crowley asked when they were once again swallowed by the night. Felt's smile widened, and Crowley had the sudden urge to pull the paperback back over his head.
"Because, my dear, in the hubbub of this whole kidnapping business, you have yet to tell me your name."
"Crowley."
Crowley said, too slow to come up with a false one.
"Charming. I'm Aziraphil. Aziraphil Phil."
"Yeah, I know."
"Oh, yes. I suppose you must do. I don't expect you're in the habit of, snatching up young men in deserted bathrooms at the theatre." "Not to worry. Oh, goodness, you're not about to put that horrid bag over my head again, are you?"
Crowley should. He really should. Rule number one of this whole kidnapping business, keep the victim in the dark, both figuratively and literally.
Do you know where we are?
Fell responded promptly, without so much as a glance out of the windshield.
Not a clue.
His gaze was wholly fixed on Crowley. It made him squirm.
What you staring at me for?
No particular reason. You just don't... Forgive me if this is terribly insensitive to your profession, but you don't much look like a criminal. Gosh, it sounds awful when I say this, but I always picture people like you to be, well, evil-looking. Ugly, perhaps, or at the very least, shifty. The cruelty of their work writ on their face. You know, that sort of thing. But in my next novel, should I survive this little excursion, I might just make the murderer more handsome, charming.
I'm not a murderer.
Perhaps not, but you cannot deny you are charming.
Crowley glanced away from the road to find Fell still smiling at him with a smug lift of the eyebrow. The bastard was toying with him. He slammed his foot on the brake, car screeching nearly to a halt, before swerving left onto a narrow gravel path.
Oh!
Fell slid forwards in his seat, rising his forearms to brace himself against the dashboard, only to awkwardly crash into it when his tied-up wrists couldn't buffer the collision.
Oh, that was entirely uncalled for,
he huffed after he'd pushed himself back into his seat.
Are you trying to kill me before even seeing a penny of the ransom money?
Crowley flushed at his ill-advised display of impulsivity. He couldn't let his victim get to him like that. That didn't bode well at all.
Ransom? Well, I can see no other reason for your abducting me. My family's fortune is common knowledge.
Of course he'd abducted Aziraphale Fell for the ransom money. But the idea had come from the letter, written in a neat, womanly hand, suggesting a convenient time and date, and offering Crowley use of an even more convenient deserted manor house in rural Lincolnshire. If it was a stitch-up, so be it. Crowley's gut instinct, and it had yet to fail him, said otherwise. Aziraphale Fell didn't look like an undercover copper. No, what he looked like was an easy target, a perfect victim, soft in body and mind, with a downright dangerous mix of youthful innocence and an entirely skewed sense of self-preservation, worn away by the comfort and privilege he'd been afforded in what Crowley knew had been a cushy life so far. Fell let out a deep sigh, shoulders sagging in a gesture of defeat. Good. Maybe he'd finally caught up on the fact that he was being abducted here.
You'll be lucky if you manage to squeeze a single penny from my father.
Then, after a self-conscious chuckle,
I probably shouldn't tell you this, or you'll drop me by the side of the road before we've even gotten to wherever you're taking me.
Fuck's sake, Fell, I'm not a murderer!
Crowley snapped, not entirely sure why this insinuation was getting to him. He might have been a murderer. It was only due to luck and circumstance that he wasn't.
You're also not a very good kidnapper.
What?
No offence, my dear, but I rather believe the whole point of a successful kidnapping is that you want to make both my family and myself believe that you would, indeed, be ready to murder me if we don't dance to your tune. Your tune, presumably, being a large sum of money from my family and complete compliance on my part.
Something like that,
Crowley mumbled, not liking the feeling of being so thoroughly examined by someone who looked like the human embodiment of a cream puff.
But I'm telling you now that if anyone's gonna bring out the killer in me, it's you.
Fel simply smiled at that, and Crowley wondered if there was anything at all he could say that wouldn't make him smile. It was making him nervous, that smile. Too bright, too cheerful, considering Fel's objectively dire situation. It was unnerving. He pushed down the gas pedal. According to the instructions in the letter, they should be arriving at the house very soon indeed. Whoever had given Jasmine Cottage its name either had an odd sense of humor or a fundamental misunderstanding of common architectural terminology. It wasn't a cottage at all. It was a mansion. Perfectly secluded, far from prying eyes and ears. Just as the letter had promised. The owner of this place, the letter writer presumably, was rich. Filthy rich. And an enemy of Aziraphale Fel, by all appearances. The house was dark and deserted, not a single lamp lighting up the small rectangles of the windows, which stretched, as far as Crowley could tell, 3 floors high. The key was under the doormat, as promised, and when Crowley turned it in the heavy iron lock, it snapped open with an eerie click. He shoved Fel inside and hastily closed the front door behind them. The car was safely hidden away in one of the old stables, just like the mysterious letter writer had suggested. Nobody could have seen them arrive or enter the house. They were entirely closed off from the rest of the world, and perfectly safe. Well, Crowley was perfectly safe. Aziraphale Fel's safety depended rather more on his family's willingness to send Crowley a large enough sum of money to facilitate his escape. But until then, this was to be their home. Crowley didn't like it. This place felt spooky. Cursed. Perhaps it was the darkness and emptiness of the entrance hall, the way their footsteps echoed ominously as they made their way up the stairs. The electric lights buzzed and flickered, illuminating a broad staircase. Crowley stood before it, hand clasped tight around Fel's round shoulder. The letter writer had led him here, but no further. The rest was up to him. And damn it! He'd not set foot in places like this often. The most he'd ever seen of grand old houses was the garage.
Home sweet home,
he muttered. Fel laughed, bright as a bell, and let himself be pushed through the entrance hall. It was lined with doors, presumably leading to drawing rooms and music rooms, and whatever other nonsense the rich thought necessary to put in their homes. But Crowley walked straight past those closed doors, marching Fel up the stairs, and then up another, narrower set, until they reached the second floor. At the end there was yet another staircase, just wide enough to fit one person, leading up to an attic. Crowley made his way towards it, pushing Fel in front of him without a word. The ceiling was lower here, the corridor narrow. There were only 2 doors, one on each side. Fel, who was slumped over and panting from the exertion, leaned against the wall, catching his breath. Crowley took his hand off his shoulder, fairly certain he wouldn't, or at the very least couldn't, make a run for it. He kicked open one of the doors, which led into a tiny attic room with a minuscule window set in the sloped ceiling and a heavy iron bed pushed against the wall underneath. Perfect. And what was even more perfect was the key sticking out of the lock. With a triumphant grin, Crowley pulled it out, then stepped back into the corridor to grab Fair by the lapels of his wine-stained shirt.
In there!
Fair stumbled through, unable to maintain his balance with his hands tied together. Crowley caught him by the elbow. Fair whipped around, and for the first time there was a glimmer of fear in his eyes. A slight lift of the eyebrows, his shoulders pulled up. Like he only just understood what he'd gotten himself into. When he spoke, his voice was breathy, flat.
Untie me.
Crowley shook his head. Too much of a risk. The room looked fairly secure. The window was set high in the ceiling and so small, even as he would struggle to squeeze through it. And the lock on the door appeared to be perfectly functional. But still...
I'm sorry,
he said, and he meant it. He stepped forward and, not knowing exactly why, reached out to smooth the wayward curl out of Fell's frowning face. His breath hitched when Crowley's fingers touched his hair, soft but heavy with pomade. It made Crowley shudder. He pulled his hand away.
It's late,
he said, gesturing towards the bed.
Get some sleep.
Fell lowered himself onto the bed, which creaked under his weight. Rusty springs screaming to life as he sat up as straight as he had in the car. Crowley turned to leave, twirling the room key in his shaking fingers. He paused with a hand on the door handle and looked back at Fell, who was observing him with an unfamiliar sharpness in his gentle face. It wasn't quite a fire, but it was a gleam of something. A candle wick before it catches the flame from a match.
Why didn't you say anything?
Crowley couldn't stop himself from asking.
To the constable earlier. You could have gotten away, you know. You could have escaped. Gotten to safety.
Fell smiled, but it was a wistful smile, as if he wasn't quite sure whether the path which had led him here had been the right one to choose.
I'm well used to safety, Crowley.
It was the first time he'd said his name, and the softness with which it was spoken made him shiver.
I'm used to doing what I'm told and being where I'm expected. I'm used to monotony and routine. But this is quite the adventure, and I wouldn't miss it for the world.
To be continued in chapter 2.